example, in some developed countries, feeding organizations partner with farm owners, food manufacturers, and businesses to rescue food that would otherwise go to waste and send it to food banks, food pantries, and meal programs. Fighting food wastage also makes business sense. In 2017, a study evaluating financial cost and benefit data from 700 companies in 17 countries found that for every $1 companies invested to reduce food loss and food waste, they saved $14 in operating costs. The savings that can be made by avoiding food wastage is also very high for private households, so advertising the financial benefit of taking action against food wastage too can speed up change. Meanwhile, in developing countries where most of the food goes to waste because of climate-induced failures, efforts geared towards helping farmers access resource-saving agricultural techniques and climate-smart practices to ensure all planted crops are harvested will go a long way. Investing in new technologies that expand the shelf life of fresh produce can also help reduce post-harvest losses. Campaigns to increase awareness about the issue can also pressure governments to invest more money in food waste reduction. And while consumers have a relatively smaller effect on food wastage in the developing world, individuals can still help the fight by making sure that their household is not wasting food. In short, there is something we can all do to ensure tons of food do not go to waste whilst millions of people are struggling with hunger across the world. While collective action is crucial, especially in the developed countries, individual consumers and businesses can also make a big difference simply by changing their habits and their practices.
Russia says the United States has deceived Moscow, and the international community after it conducted an advanced intercontinental missile interception test. Russia's foreign ministry says the exercise used technology that is part of the Aegis Ashore missile defense system, which the Pentagon had assured the Kremlin was not aimed at Russia's long-range capabilities. A Russian foreign ministry spokesperson has described the development as quote-unquote a new confirmation of the dangerous and destabilizing character of Washington's anti-ballistic missile strategy and, quote, obvious anti-Russian orientation. Maria Zakharova says the test proved the falsity of American statements, saying, quote, for many years, America assured us that the interception of Russian ICBMs by American standard systems, including this modification, is technically impossible. There are fears the test risks paving the way for Russia testing similar technologies against America's intercontinental ballistic missiles. Moscow has already stated that it reserves the right to take the necessary response measure. On Monday, the U.S. military used the new advanced technology to fire, for the first time, a missile from a warship which downed an ICBM. Previously, the U.S. had promoted the weapons system as being limited against short and intermediate-range missile threats. Russia says this is direct evidence and a concrete example of how Washington manipulated public opinion of its country, lied to its international partners, and justified its actions in the international arena with far-fetched pretexts. Following the collapse of the INF and before the Anti-Ballistic Missile Treaty, the only remaining U.S.-Russian nuclear arms control agreement, New START, is also, as things stand, set to expire early next year. Moscow says it hasn't closed the door on negotiations to extend the agreement, formerly known as the New Strategic Arms Reduction Treaty. The projected U.S. presidential election winner, Joe Biden, has previously said he will explore the treaty's extension without conditions. However, bilateral relations between the two countries have always been on very shaky grounds. Analysts say the latest American missile test will only escalate military tensions. Amid Russia's worsening relations with NATO, it could not have come at a worse time. Questions have been raised as to whether the U.S. may use the system against Russian military interests. The weapon used to down the ICBM, the Standard Missile 3 or SM-3, is part of the Aegis Ballistic Missile Defense System. Moscow has long suspected the system to be a major pathway to a U.S. global missile shield to undermine Russia's military power. The SM-3 missiles have also been deployed close to Russian soil, in Poland and Romania. Moscow says it has repeatedly warned it would take similar measures to ensure national security and maintain a strategic stability. Essentially, that means more sophisticated weapon systems deployed by the adversaries, while suspicions between the U.S. on the one hand and Russia and China on the other spiral out of control.
Bahrain's top diplomat on an official visit to Israel, breaking a long-time taboo. Foreign Minister Abdel Latif al-Zayani landed in Israel on Wednesday. His controversial trip this week marks the first such visit to Israel by any official from the tiny Persian Gulf Kingdom. Al-Zayani's trip coincides with a visit to Israel by America's top diplomat Mike Pompeo. The Bahraini delegation went on to occupy Jerusalem al-Quds. The top Bahraini diplomat sat down for talks with senior Israeli officials, including his counterpart Gabi Ashkenazi and Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu. The U.S. Secretary of State was apparently there to facilitate the controversial rapprochement. Al-Zayani's trip, which has angered the Palestinians, is part of a U.S.-backed push to normalize ties between the two sides.
It is obvious that the Trump administration wants to make sure that the normalization process and the what they used to call the deal of the century will be very crucial and strong before they get away from the power in January. So they are doing marathonian steps so that everything will be on the ground and will be very much clear laid out.
Palestinian groups denounced the trilateral meeting between the U.S., Bahrain and Israel as a clear attack on the rights of the Palestinian people. The Palestinians want all Arab nations to refrain from establishing ties with Israel until the Israeli occupation is over and a Palestinian state becomes a reality. But as part of a U.S. brokered initiative, Bahrain and its Persian Gulf neighbor, the United Arab Emirates, signed normalization accords with Israel at the White House in mid-September. Sudan has also agreed to normalize ties with Israel as part of a deal that will guarantee much-needed U.S. financial aid. Israel has escalated its violations in the occupied territories over the past years. For instance, it has stepped up settlement construction on occupied lands. The regime has also stepped up demolition of Palestinian homes. So far this year, nearly 700 structures have been razed to the ground across the occupied West Bank, including East Jerusalem al-Quds. The UN says that number is more than the figure in any full year since 2016. Palestinians have widely blamed the worsening situation on policies pursued by the administration of U.S. President Donald Trump. The American president makes no secret of his extremely pro-Israel stance. Trump took the American support for the regime to a whole new level by moves such as recognizing Jerusalem al-Quds as Israel's capital. Palestinian groups now say the U.S.-backed push to normalize ties between several Arab states and Israel is further emboldening the regime. How can Palestinians now trust the U.S. as it loudly brands itself as a mediator between them and Israel? Palestinians have been fighting an uphill battle against occupation for decades. Things are perhaps tougher today as several Arab states are abandoning the cause and normalizing their ties with Israel. Palestinians say these Arab states are stabbing them in the back. Palestinians know all too well that their options are very limited at the moment. As many governments refuse to pressure the Israeli regime, the people of Palestine are hoping popular grassroots campaigns against Israel will one day change things for the better.
after months of chaos and hundreds of thousands of deaths worldwide, an end to the crisis triggered by the deadly coronavirus pandemic could be within reach. U.S. biotech firm Moderna has announced its experimental vaccine against COVID-19 was 94.5% effective. The announcement would make it the second major breakthrough in worldwide hunt for an effective vaccine. Moderna has announced that its newly developed vaccine would pose no significant side effects.
At the end of this trial, if the efficacy dropped down to 80% or even 70%, this is still really a very good result and a really strong reason to be optimistic to have a vaccine and very soon vaccine.
According to the data provided by the company, its vaccine was given in two doses 28 days apart, and the preliminary results are based on 95 volunteers of the 30,000 who fell ill with COVID-19. Just last week, U.S. drug maker giant Pfizer, along with its German partner BioNTech company, announced the invention of a separate effective vaccine against the deadly virus. According to scientific reports, a key advantage of Moderna's vaccine is that it does not need ultra-cold storage like Pfizer's, making it easier to distribute.
Oh, yes, certainly. I mean, these are really good results, although they are interim result, early stages data, but yet these are really exceeding the expectation, because what we expected in the scientific community and also the regulatory bodies were that we will have a coronavirus vaccine around 60 to 70% effective, and this vaccine, both of the vaccine, Moderna and Pfizer results are more than 90%.
The vaccines are viewed powerful tools to fight a pandemic that has infected 54 million people worldwide and killed 1.3 million. The news also comes at a time when COVID-19 cases are soaring, hitting new records in the United States and pushing some European countries back into lockdowns. Next year, the U.S. government could have easy access to more than 1 billion doses just from the two vaccine makers, more than needed for the country's 330 million residents. Other European nations are expected to have easy access to the vaccines. Head of the World Health Organization has hailed the rapid progress towards a COVID-19 vaccine, but insisted that every country had to reap the benefits from the vaccines. Never in history has vaccine research progressed so quickly. We must apply the same urgency and innovation to ensuring that all countries benefit from this scientific achievement.
And I can announce that we have today secured an initial agreement for 5 million doses of the Moderna vaccine.
Tedros Adhanom has said other countries could not wait for bilateral agreements to get the vaccine, since the process could take years to negotiate. There are now concerns that richer countries could monopolize the distribution of the vaccine. Western nations have already ordered millions of the doses of the vaccine, potentially leaving poorer countries in Africa and Asia without supply for years to come. It's feared relatively wealthy nations will likely be able to vaccinate their entire populations.
The first agreement that we reached with the U.S. government was for an order of 100 million doses. So we anticipate to be able to ship up to 20 million of those 100 million before the end of the year. So we are making product, as you know, every day and stockpiling it. And assuming we get the green light from the FDA, I would say sometime in December, I'm sure General Perna from Operation Warp Speed will be ready with the trucks to load the product and to distribute it in the U.S. via the CDC guidelines.
The EU has already ordered 200 million doses of Pfizer's vaccine, while the UK has ordered 40 million doses. People in low-income countries could be waiting until 2024. Drug-making companies could also benefit profusely from the world's deadliest pandemic in recent memory. Pfizer and BioNTech could make $13 billion from coronavirus vaccine.
A mega free trade pact came into existence a few days ago. The Regional Comprehensive Economic Partnership has been described as the largest free trade agreement in history. 10 Southeast Asian countries, as well as China, South Korea, Japan, Australia, and New Zealand, formed a brand new trading bloc. The agreement was signed on the sidelines of the annual meeting of the Association of Southeast Asian Nations on Sunday, after nearly a decade of negotiations. What makes the RCEP very important is its sheer size, nearly a third of global economy. The world's largest trading bloc has become a reality as the international community is grappling with the devastating economic impact of the coronavirus pandemic. It is hoped that the RCEP will spur economic recovery from the downturn caused by the virus. Meanwhile, the new agreement, which excludes the United States, is widely viewed as a geopolitical victory for the world's second largest economy, China. Observers believe it will boost China's influence in the region at a time when the U.S. is taking a tough line on its arch economic rival.
I can't emphasize enough how important the free trade agreement is for the reshaping of international political and economic relationships, and this will clearly strengthen China's hand in trying to keep the United States from its somewhat hostile incursions into what the Chinese government considers its territories.
The RCEP is described by some experts as a major win for multilateralism and free trade, despite America's withdrawal from many international agreements. The new free trade agreement is often compared to the Trans-Pacific Partnership deal that U.S. President Donald Trump defiantly tore apart soon after he took office. The administration of U.S. President Donald Trump has been particularly confrontational in its economic strategy. The White House has implemented protectionist policies like no other U.S. administration. It has taken a tough line on China, blaming it for a large part of America's trade deficit. The U.S. has also engaged in trade conflicts with other major players like the European Union. But Trump's protectionist agenda is not preventing the rest of the world from pursuing free trade at different levels. The Regional Comprehensive Economic Partnership is proof that the world prefers multilateralism.
That will give extraordinary support to the multilateralization of international trade in a way that perhaps is not contemplated in the concept of bipolarity, or even in the notion of globalization as it was being considered in recent years.
Even America's close allies like the EU are engaged in free trade negotiations. Trump's protectionist agenda may eventually backfire, because as a growing number of countries sign free trade deals, American exporters may soon find themselves losing ground to international competitors. But who knows what direction America will take in the future? Trump will probably have to leave the White House in January, and that does not give him enough time to complete his America First project. The projected winner of the U.S. presidential election, Joe Biden, will face many dilemmas exactly because of Trump's controversial policies. Biden's presidency will probably mean a more traditional U.S. role on the world stage. He could bring back America from the brink of a full-blown trade and military conflict with China. But he cannot abruptly do away with Trump's protectionism to join free trade deals, because right now, many Americans would see any such decision as throwing away U.S. jobs.
What you heard was an IRIB English radio program. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
in the limelight.
More than half of households in the United States of America are not very confident that they can afford to put food on the table as the holidays approach, according to federal census data. We have prepared an article for you in this regard, written by Mike Ludwig Ryder. This article is published under the heading, As a Stimulus Runs Out, 56% of U.S. households are worried about affording food. Stay tuned, please, for the details of this article. More than half of households in the United States of America are not very confident that they can afford to put food on the table as the holidays approach, according to federal census data. Meanwhile, what remains of federal pandemic relief programs is set to expire before the end of year. U.S. Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell has so far refused to take up a $2.2 trillion economic relief package passed by Democrats months ago, even after Democrats attempt to compromise with Republicans and lower the price tag by $1.2 trillion. If U.S. Congress fails to act, an estimated 12 million workers will lose federal emergency unemployment benefits when they expire on December 26, on top of the 4.6 million who will have exhausted their benefits before then, according to the Century Foundation. The COVID-19 pandemic has entered a terrifying phase in recent weeks, forcing some state and local governments to issue stay-at-home orders, while others refuse to impose serious mitigations despite spikes in cases and hospitalizations. The U.S. has reported an average 162,860 new cases each day over the past week, a 77% increase from the daily average 2 weeks ago, according to the COVID trackers at the New York Times. Deaths surpassed 250,000 on Thursday, November 19th. We have had 1 million cases documented over the past week. Our rate of rise is higher than it even was in the summer. We have hospitalizations going up 25% week over week, said Brett Girora, Assistant Secretary for Health and the Department of Health and Human Services, in an interview with CNN on Thursday, November 19th. Unemployment remains stubbornly high as cities and states stare down another round of lockdowns, with 2.2 million people filing new unemployment claims over the past 2 weeks, according to the Economic Policy Institute. State unemployment benefits are paid for 26 weeks, but the pandemic has gone on much longer than that, leaving millions of people dependent on the two federal unemployment programs established by the first pandemic relief package passed in March. These programs are set to expire the day after Christmas. Millions of families are sitting on the fiscal cliff. 56% of households in the United States of America are not very confident that they will be able to afford enough food in the next 4 weeks, according to federal data collected in late October. The Center for Budget and Policy Priorities estimates that, right now, up to 11 million children live in households that could not afford enough to eat over the past week. And 40% of children live in a household that is either food insecure or behind on rent. When people struggle to afford basic needs, their spending on non-essentials such as holiday gifts plummets, further slowing an already sluggish economic recovery as the pandemic takes a turn for the worst. Meanwhile, U.S. Congress remains at an impasse over a second pandemic relief bill. The White House has backed out of negotiations as U.S. President Donald Trump remains fixated on spreading disinformation and attempting to overturn the election he lost to Joe Biden. With two Republican Senate seats at risk in an upcoming runoff in Georgia, McConnell has said Congress should pass another stimulus, but Republicans are reportedly sticking to a $500 billion proposal. Democrats say much more is needed, including another round of stimulus checks and support for state and local governments struggling on the front lines of the pandemic. In a letter to McConnell this week, House Speaker Nancy Pelosi and Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer implored the GOP to return to the negotiating table this week and come to a COVID-19 relief agreement to crush the virus and save American lives. Earlier this year, during negotiations with Secretary Steven Mnuchin and Chief of Staff Mark Meadows, we agreed to compromise on a relief package and lowered our request by $1.2 trillion, they wrote. Since that time, you have lowered your proposal from $1 trillion to $500 billion, despite the consensus from economists and experts that the country requires a much larger injection of aid, they added. Indeed, financial analysts say relief proposals offered by Democrats would allow for the most economic recovery. A new international analysis by the Institute for New Economic Thinking found countries such as South Korea and New Zealand that focused on lockdowns early in the pandemic rather than preserving their economies have gained control over the virus and are now seeing their economies grow. In contrast with the dire economic circumstances currently in the United States of America. Reflecting Trump's view of the pandemic, much of the GOP appears unfazed as the nation plunged toward a fiscal cliff. Promising news that a COVID-19 vaccine is on the way may be buoying hopes among Republicans that an easy fix to the pandemic is on the horizon. However, there are growing concerns that the state governments lack the resources necessary to effectively distribute a vaccine. States need at least $6 to $8 billion to distribute a vaccine, and to date, only $200 million has been allocated for vaccine preparedness, according to the Kaiser Family Foundation. Chuck Schumer announced on Thursday, November 19th, that McConnell had agreed to restart negotiations with Democrats, although he offered few other details, according to reports. Democrats and Republicans must agree on a government spending package by December 11th to avoid a government shutdown. If they don't agree on pandemic relief as well, millions of their constituents will be struggling to afford food, not to mention rents, medical bills, and other expenses by the end of the year.
This is A to Z. Introduction to Islamic Lifestyle. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. In the name of Allah, the Most Beneficent, the Most Merciful. Dear brothers and sisters, Assalamu alaikum. Peace and blessings of Allah be upon you all. This is A to Z, coming to you from IRIB English Radio, and I'm your host, Ali. This radio show is about Islamic lifestyle, and in each episode, we will be talking about a different lesson. Please stay with us till the end of today's program. Today's lesson, patience instead of complaining. We all face challenges. Some give in to challenges and others complain. And there are some who observe patience, which is called sabr. The linguistic meaning of sabr and patience is confinement, while its meaning in the Sharia in Islam is to continue the soul to, you know, confining our soul to obedience of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala and avoidance of disobeying Him and not getting angry at the decree of Allah and His predestination. As for the saying of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, which means, so be patient with gracious patience. This is chapter 70, verse number 5. Allah Almighty says, so be patient with gracious patience. This means a patience without grief. Allah says to him, be patient over the harm of those polytheists to you, and the harm that you find from them should not prevent you from conveying the message of Allah, which He has ordered for you to convey. And this was, you know, primarily sent for the Prophet of Islam, Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alaihi wasallam. He faced so many tribulations and trials and challenges in the way of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. And Allah advised him to be patient. And this is a lesson for all of us, to be patient in the way of Allah. Welcome back to your listeners. Today we are discussing patience instead of complaining. Some people choose to complain. Others, they are patient over challenges and trials. Complaining is not something that they sign up for. There is nothing in Allah's commandment to His Prophet that when He says with gracious patience, that implies that it is an order from Allah to him in some circumstances only. Rather, this was the commandment of Allah to him in all circumstances. Because since the Prophet was sent as a prophet until he died, he faced harm from them. And he was patient in the face of all the harm that he faced from the disbelievers before Allah gave him permission to fight them. And after his permission to him to do so, that is, perform jihad. Brothers and sisters, patience means resistance. And it is not a selective patience, that we are patient in some fields, but when it comes to some other challenges, some other, you know, trials, we end up losing patience. No, patience means resisting in the face of these challenges, especially when they're in the way of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. So imagine you're trying to live a life of an obedient, good Muslim, right? You wear hijab, you do your prayers, so on and so forth. And you face challenges from the secular-minded people around you, from the liberal-minded people around you. What do you do in the face of these challenges? Well, one option is to just drop whatever you're doing and be like them. Well, guess what? Islam says no. You have to be patient, you have to be resistant, and you have to keep doing the right thing no matter how many challenges you face. Dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, thank you very much for staying with us till the end of today's episode of A to Z. Don't forget to log on to our website at www.parstoday.com, Call of Islam page. We leave you all in the care of Allah. Till next time, wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Senator David Perdue privately pushed U.S. Treasury Secretary Steve Mnuchin to give wealthy sports owners a lucrative tax break last year, according to a previously unreported letter obtained by ProPublica. Dear listeners, stay with us for an article in this regard written jointly by Robert Fatorecci and Justin Elliott writers. This article is published under the heading Georgia Senator privately pushed for lucrative tax break for sports team owners. Here's the details of this article. Senator David Perdue privately pushed Treasury Secretary Steve Mnuchin to give wealthy sports owners a lucrative tax break last year, according to a previously unreported letter obtained by ProPublica. After 2017 tax bill championed by President Donald Trump passed, Mnuchin and the Treasury had to write rules on how the legislation would work in practice. Of the hundreds of pages of new regulations the agency developed, Perdue wrote about his concern with one extremely narrow rule. The owners of professional sports teams were being excluded from a valuable tax break being granted to many other businesses that are structured so that the companies don't pay taxes, but the owners do. I hope you will reconsider, Perdue wrote in the 2019 letter. Many such letters on regulatory matters are signed by multiple senators, sometimes dozens, but in this case, Perdue alone wrote and signed the letter. Why Perdue got interested in an obscure tax regulation, which would impact at most only a small set of the richest Americans, is unclear. Perdue was not on the committee that crafted the legislation, making his in-the-weeds lobbying on the arcane regulation unusual, congressional experts said. The U.S. Treasury ultimately declined to adopt the revision Perdue sought. If the regulation had been altered as Perdue wanted, it would have been a boon for some of his largest donors. Perdue has received hundreds of thousands of dollars in campaign contributions from the owners of professional sports clubs, including now fellow Georgia Senator Kelly Loeffler, who co-owns Atlanta's WNBA team, The Dream. Perdue's office did not answer questions about why he sent the letter or whether he discussed the matter with any sports team owners. Perdue and Loeffler, who was appointed to her role earlier this year, are locked in runoff elections to be held on January 5th with the balance of the Senate in play. If both Republicans lose, Democrats will take over the chamber, potentially allowing Joe Biden to implement more of his agenda than he would under a divided government. John Ossoff, Perdue's Democratic challenger, has cast Perdue as a member of the Washington swamp who caters to the interests of corporate donors. Perdue was one of the 2017 tax bill's biggest boosters, publicly describing it as a windfall for average Americans. A single mom making $41,000 with a child is going to get 75% tax cut, he told a reporter when it passed. This is a great day for the middle class, he added. Before Perdue became a senator in 2015, he was a top executive for a string of companies, including Reebok, where in the early 2000s, the company inked major licensing deals with the NFL, the NBA, and the NHL. A review of his campaign contributions shows that Perdue has taken more than $425,000 from the owners of professional sports teams and their relatives. Some of the top donors include Divas Family, which owns the Orlando Magic, John Ingram, who owns the Nashville SC soccer team, Los Angeles Kings owner Philip Anschutz, and Cleveland Browns owner Jimmy Haslam. On the same day Perdue sent Mnuchin the letter, he received $3,000 in donations from three lobbyists at Georgia Link Public Affairs Group, a lobbying firm that was representing the Atlanta Braves. Because of the Braves' ownership structure, it's unlikely the team would have been affected by the regulation. But around that time, MLB was lobbying under rule, urging the Treasury to give its team owners the tax break. Perdue's campaign expenditures suggest he was in Atlanta that day, January 23, 2019. One of the lobbyists who contributed, John Tripp Martin, said he couldn't recall if the contribution was made at a fundraiser, but he said he did not discuss the tax exemption with Perdue. Another Perdue donor in the sports world is Loeffler. Before being picked by Georgia's governor to fill a vacant Senate seat in late 2019, Loeffler and her husband were prominent members of the business community and major donors to Republicans in the state and nationally. Loeffler was chief executive of PACT, a financial services company, and remains a co-owner of the Atlanta Dream. Her husband, Jeffrey Sprecher, is chief executive of Intercontinental Exchange, the parent company of New York Stock Exchange. Together, the couple has given about $70,000 in campaign contributions to Perdue. Mary Brock, who co-owns the Dream with Loeffler, has given Perdue more than $38,000. Loeffler did not respond to questions about whether she discussed the tax break regulation with Perdue. A spokeswoman for the team also declined to answer specific questions, saying in a statement that the Atlanta Dream is not a political entity and we are in the business of sports and entertainment. We are focused on building a successful team on the court and creating a top fan experience, he added. Like many WNBA teams, the Dream has not been profitable. Reversing the regulation would have certainly benefited Loeffler if the Dream became profitable, but tax experts ProPublica spoke to were split about whether a reversal could have cut her tax burden even if the team remained in the red. The landmark 2017 tax overhaul didn't just lower the headline tax rates for corporations such as Exxon or Facebook. It also included a more complicated buy, extremely valuable tax break for business known as pass-throughs. A pass-through is a corporate structure, anything from a solo graphic design operation to a large professional sports team that doesn't pay taxes itself. Instead, the income passes through to the owners, who then are on the hook for the taxes. The new tax law granted a 20% deduction to most, but not all, of these businesses. The hastily drafted bill left open to interpretation which sorts of businesses would be eligible to get this tax break. With tens of billions of dollars per year at stake, that ambiguity set off a flurry of lobbying as the Treasury Department set about writing regulations. A group of prominent tax academics who analyzed the bill warned that complex rules governing this new deduction will invite gaming opportunities because there is no particular logic as to who clearly fits into the preferred categories. As a result, taxpayers will be incentivized to engage in aggressive and socially costly tax gaming to fall within the haphazardly drawn lines. Purdue's January 2019 letter amounted to an effort to shift those lines to the benefit of sports team owners. He asked that Mnuchin allow owners of professional sports teams to claim a Section 199A deduction using the formal legal citation for tax break. It followed a similar push in October 2018 by MLB Commissioner Rob Manfred. In his letter to the Treasury, Manfred pleaded for the agency to let club owners take the tax break. Perdue also spoke on the phone to Mnuchin while the regulation was being hashed out in late November 2018, according to the Treasury Secretary's public calendar. The topic of the phone call is not specified.
A diverse range of programs. Spirituality. Youth. Eastern Tales. Roundtable discussions. Culture. Politics.
Round the world with reporters.
Thousands in Paris, tens of thousands all over France are protesting for the second time in a week against the global security law. This new law has been voted in the French parliament and makes it illegal to film and publish images of police officers. For these demonstrators, this new law is a violation of the right to inform.
We will no longer be able to film policemen in action and to put them on the social networks, which is of course very dangerous because nowadays there is a real issue in France about violence from the policemen.
Even at the very beginning, of the sanitary crisis. With the total confinement, the police were controlling everybody, asking for their certificate to be able to leave their residence, you know, even though it could eventually be defendable from a sanitary point of view. Now, it has nothing to do with that. This proposed law is not directly connected to the sanitary crisis at all, and they are just giving more powers to the police.
Earlier this week, the police used tear gas and water cannon when protesters took the street in front of the French parliament. With the new law, it will become illegal to film this kind of police intervention. During the Yellow Vest movement, videos have been used in judicial investigation concerning police violence. With this law, the French state can more easily hide illegal actions committed by police officers. It can also more easily hide scandals, which opens the door for abuse of power.
For us, this law doesn't only concern journalists. During the Yellow Vest movement, we have seen an explosion of police violence. One of the important arms to fight against this is the ability to film the police violence and to denounce it. So this law is also against us, not only against journalists. There is also a surveillance of demonstrators by drones.
The French government says they want a better protection for their police force. But the new French law is seriously criticized by the Human Rights Council of the United Nations, as well as by a large spectrum of the French civil society, journalist associations, trade unions, political parties, and human rights defenders. 1 year of prison and 45,000 euros of penalties, that's what someone risks for publishing the face of a police officer. Many people here say that the French government is using the coronavirus crisis to limit personal and public liberties. Chris Den Hond, Paris.
The U.S. presidential election remains unresolved, but what seems crystal clear is that the nation is more divided at any time than since the 1960s, or perhaps even the 1860s. A new poll found that nearly 80% of America says they are deeply divided on its most foundational values. Whoever is inaugurated in January will face a deeply mistrustful and disbelieving public, as the poll also finds that just 30% of Americans believe the country will grow more united in 2021. For a nation which is the richest in the world and which faces no serious external threat, such levels of disharmony are shocking even to many Americans themselves.
The far right, that's really come from almost like Trumpism, if you know, that movement still stays strong, we can see more conflict in the next 4 years. And I think it's really just dependent on how Joe Biden kind of handles the next 4 years. And also what kind of information is really getting flown out of the far right, and whether that gets filtered or not, or whether that gets spread very rapidly.
Distrust is not something which grows overnight. Many attribute the division to the American liberals' obsession with so-called identity politics, which divides and redivides people into smaller and smaller tribes based on gender, race, ethnicity, urban-rural, coastal-inland, and on and on. U.S. conservatives are criticized for having a limited view of unity due to an us-versus-them mentality, which leaves little room for change or modernization.
I think that Republicans and Democrats have become almost like their own tribes, where they're not willing to give an inch to the other. I hope that's not going to continue, and I hope that the rhetoric becomes less incendiary as we move forward. But I don't think that Trump is doing anything but fomenting more discontent among groups of people that are already tribalized and having a hard time getting together.
The United States is proving unable to resolve a host of enormous problems. Protecting from the coronavirus pandemic, Great Depression-era levels of unemployment alongside a skyrocketing Wall Street, endemic economic inequality which has exploded in 2020, constant racial discrimination, record disharmony between genders, a Congress which is half as popular as an often deeply unpopular president, and, of course, a disputed election, the third in six tries.
The poll makes it clear that belief in the nation's division is not a partisan issue,
as Democrats, Republicans, and Independents all agree in similar proportions. Americans can only seem to agree on one thing, that they really, deeply disagree. Ramin Mazahari, Chicago.
Capital Sana'a hosted the first scientific conference on cancerous diseases with a focus on gynecological cancers, attended by a large number of specialized doctors and academics under the sponsorship of the Yemeni Health Ministry.
We thought about enhancing the role of person, individual roles, community, families, communities, to be like sharing us our concern about their health, by educating them, by raising awareness about the signs and symptoms of cancers.
Since 2015, the number of cancer cases in Yemen has increased rapidly. According to the Undersecretary of the Health Ministry, Ali Jahath, he says this is due to the prohibited arms used by the U.S.-Saudi coalition over the past years.
That they have used forbidden armaments in bombing Yemen.
Yemeni army says it has discovered large quantities of U.S.-built munitions at the positions of Saudi mercenaries while conducting clean-up operations in the provinces of Marib and Al-Bayda. Saudi Arabia and a number of its regional allies launched a devastating war on Yemen in March 2015 in order to bring for Riyadh friendly President Abdurrabbu Mansour Hadi back to power. Riyadh is the largest buyer of American-made weaponry. Trump signed an arms deal worth $110 billion with Saudi Arabia in May 2017. The Saudi military aggression against Yemen, coupled with a naval blockade, has killed hundreds of thousands of people and plunged Yemen into what UN says the world's worst humanitarian crisis. Abdulatif Al-Washali, Sana'a.
Military camps have been set up to help overwhelmed reception facilities, but local authorities say the government is not doing enough. The island's president, Antonio Morales, has denounced what he calls the Ministry of Interior's continued contempt for migrants and the island, demanding the resignation of those responsible. Driven by economic hardship, around 17,000 migrants have arrived on the Canary Islands this year. According to Spain's Interior Ministry, that's a 1,000% increase from 2019. In 2019, 1,885 migrants drowned in the Mediterranean Sea, and 2020's death toll is fast approaching 1,000. Open Arms, the only NGO permitted to carry out search and rescue missions at present, wrote on Twitter, "Despite the enormous commitment of our medical team, a six-month-old baby has just died. We requested an urgent evacuation for him and other people in serious conditions, but he didn't make it. How much pain and sorrow." The International Criminal Court has sued the European Union, saying member states should be prosecuted for the deaths of thousands of migrants who have drowned in the Mediterranean. In its 245-page document, the ICC says the EU's deterrence-based migration policy, which came into force after 2014, sacrifices the lives of migrants in distress at sea to dissuade others from seeking a safe haven in Europe. Bianca Rahimi, London.
As the G20 summit is about to kick off in Saudi Arabia, Amnesty International is calling on the attendees of the meeting to take the kingdom to task for its appalling human rights record. The Crown had planned to promote its contentious reform agenda to the world and show Saudi Arabia is open for business. However, Riyadh summit will be solely held in the form of a virtual meeting due to the coronavirus restrictions. Amnesty International is urging G20 leaders to join the call for the immediate release of a number of jailed women's rights activists arrested in 2018.
What we said on the eve of the G20 is that Saudi Arabia's real change makers, the activists who spearheaded campaigns for women's rights, are in jail or facing trial. Riyadh is an inappropriate host.
Since assuming the G20 presidency in December last year, Riyadh has publicized new initiatives on women's employment opportunities, claiming that the kingdom is strongly committed to empowering